The date is Tuesday, August 8, 2017. The time is 11:02 a.m. This is a hearing of the District of Columbia Rental Housing Commission. The location is the hearing room in Suite 1140 North, 441 4th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. We're here pursuant to D.C. Law 6-10, the Rental Housing Act of 1985 as amended. I'm Chairman Peter Sagaty-Mazak, and I will serve to chair today's hearing. With me on my right is Commissioner Diana Harris-Epps, and on my left is Commissioner Michael Spencer. We have one argument today, notice for hearing at 11 a.m. in regards to the housing accommodations located at 3003 Van Ness Street Northwest, Unit W1131. And the tenant petition number is TP30842. The case is styled Gabriel Feynman, Tenant Appellant versus Smith Property Holdings, Van Ness, LLP, Housing Provider Appellee. The commission notes there are parties seated before it and would ask that you identify yourselves for the record, beginning with the tenant appellant.
My name is Gabriel Feynman. I'm appearing pro se.
Thank you, Mr. Feynman.
Good morning. Deborah Leggy on behalf of the housing provider.
Thank you, Ms. Leggy. I'd briefly like to explain our procedures. Our rules are similar to those of the D.C. Court of Appeals. Each party will have 20 minutes to present your case. Beginning with the tenant appellant will have up to 5 minutes to reserve out of your 20 for rebuttal following the presentation of the housing provider appellee. The housing provider appellee will have no rebuttal period and has to present all of its arguments in 20 minutes. In our discretion, we may allow for additional time for argument in the event that we engage in questions that occupy a substantial portion of your time. Our hearing will be recorded on an audio CD. Our decision will be issued in writing and sent to the parties in 4 to 6 weeks, 30 to 45 days is what we hope. In this proceeding, the Commission does not request, nor will it accept, post-hearing submissions from either party. Please turn off any cell phones or any other electronic equipment. In the interest of administrative efficiency, I probably know the answer to this question. Is there any interest by the parties to try to resolve this through mediation at this point or not?
No.
Okay.
And I do not have the ability.
We're not aware of any preliminary matters in this case, Mr. Feynman, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay. Will do. Okay, Mr. Feynman, it's 11:05, and you've got 15 minutes at least to present your appeal.
Thank you. Excuse me. First, let me state that this is a case about the notice required by the Rental Housing Act and not a case about concession leases, the amount of rent that I was charged, or anything else. I say that because I have stated this fact in every document I have filed with the OAH and because the housing provider's documents completely ignored this and the OAH mainly opined on concession leases. This is a case about notice. The Rental Housing Act does not require annual notice of the rent charged. Instead, it requires that before a landlord can increase the rent, it must tell the tenant how much he is currently paying and the new amount he will have to pay. Why? What's the purpose of this notice? It seems self-evident. When the rent is going to increase, the tenant needs to know what the new rent will be so that he or she can either budget for the new amount or look for another apartment. A majority of the apartment owners under rent stabilization do exactly this. They tell the renter the actual rent that they are currently paying and what the new rent will be. However, some, like Equity, give the tenant a notice that is of absolutely no use to them at all. it is effectively no notice at all. The equity notice consists of the maximum rent they could legally charge for the unit, in my case, over $3,100, rather than the actual rent that they charged me, a little less than $2,200. Then they applied the percentage increase to that higher number, and thus computed a number that was far above the market rent, and a number that they never intended to charge for the unit. In fact, when I gave notice of vacating the unit, they immediately advertised it for slightly under $2,000, or more than $1,100 less than the amount of the notice to me. In fact, in the notice itself that they sent, they suggested that you contact the landlord to negotiate a lower rent. So they never really intended to charge the rent that was in the notice, and yet that's the only number that they gave to the tenant. This should be a simple case. It turns on what the number the landlord should use to meet the statutory requirement to give notice of the current rent. The term current rent is not defined in the statute when this notice was given, but its meaning would seem to be evident. Excuse me. Current means now. So the current rent is what the tenant must pay to keep from being evicted at the time that the notice is presented.
Now, let me ask you this, Mr. Kleinman.
Sure.
You raise a number of questions or issues about the forms that RAD issues with respect to a landlord's filing of a registration and the rent, the annual rent for particular units. What's the nature of your complaint about the RAD forms as it relates to what you're talking about now with respect to the notice of the appropriate rent with respect to increasing or adjusting rent?
Well, I'm not complaining about the RAD forms. I'm complaining about the way that certain landlords, mainly REITs, fill out these forms. And, in fact, they don't have to use that form. They just have to provide the information that the RAD wants to have on the form.
Okay.
So, the term rent, on the other hand, in the phrase current rent, the term rent is defined in the statute. And that's the heart of my case. Rent means the entire amount of money demanded, received, or charged by a housing provider for an apartment. Demanded, received, or charged. That would seem clear. It's what the landlord charges and demands that the tenant pay. Likewise, the current rent would be the amount of rent at the time that the notice is issued. So in my case, the landlord had authority to debit my bank account for the rent. Each month, it demanded $2,200 or so from my bank. It received $2,200 from my bank that debited my account and credited their account. $2,200 is what they charged me, not $3,100. Remember, rent is defined by what is demanded, received, and charged, which in this case was $2,200, not $3,100.
Let me ask you this. You on page 14 of your brief, you say, housing providers who do not use concession leases show the actual rent on these forms and not the unadjusted maximum legal rent, making it easier for tenants to plan for the future. I guess what I'm asking is, it appears to me that we have an issue here of a lease being a contract between a landlord and a tenant in the terms of a lease, and then you have superimposed on that with respect to rent-controlled units, you have requirements with respect to notice of rent adjustments.
I don't think they're superimposed. I think it's a separate requirement.
Separate, what you can call them, whatever. however you want to do it.
Yes.
And what you have here is you have a situation where concession leases are deemed, it's my understanding that concession leases are done to attract tenants, and your point is that they're not, that a lower amount of rent really isn't an inducement, because that was the rationale below, that it's an inducement for tenants and landlords to come to a agreed upon rent for a year that's less than what rent might otherwise be charged. And that then serves as, arguably, one might argue, serves as an inducement. Your point is that it's really not. It's not an inducement. Could you kind of explain? Because then all of a sudden I'm wondering whether or not the easy thing to do here would be to try to interfere with contract and say, look, you can't, concession leases are out. Those are now deemed to be, as a matter of contract, to be illegal, or I don't know, unless you create a separate regulatory scheme for concession leases. I'm trying to figure out what kind of remedy you're looking for here.
You know, I deliberately drafted this particular tenant complaint to avoid the whole issue of concession leases, which itself is a very complex area. But you sort of have to deal with it, as you point out, in the terms because of the rationalizations made by the OAH. So the fact is that when they advertised my apartment to me, they didn't say it was $3,100. And none of the tenants find out that it's $3,100 until after they have given notice on their old apartment, hired movers, and then come in to sign the actual lease. And then they see that there's an amount there of $3,100.
So let me interject really quickly. So when you first started, before you gave notice to vacate your prior apartment, what was your understanding of the rent amount for this new apartment?
Rent.
Did you have
$2,000? No. They had never told me.
Did they affirmatively tell you that it was going to be $2,000?
Yes, that was what it was advertised for, and that's what they told me. Now, in fact, I sold my house and moved there. It was a very definitive thing that was done. So they advertised this at the lower rent, and they never tell you. There's now, today, not at that time, of the time these events took place, but today they put an asterisk on their website after the amount. And if you hover your cursor over the amount, it says $2,100. But if you follow the asterisk down 20 screens where they've advertised 40 apartments, down to the bottom, there's an asterisk that says maybe subject to a discount or something like that. So they really don't tell you at all about the $3,100 and the fact that although you have rent control that limits the amount of the increase in the rent to CPI plus 2 for in most cases, but rent control does not control the discount or the concession, which they can shrink at will to raise your rent. But this is not a case about that. This is a case about if they're giving the proper notice required under the statute before they have a rent increase. That's what it's about.
Okay. You've got a few more minutes, sir.
Okay. So imagine my surprise when they notify me that my current rent was not at all what was demanded, received, and charged, but almost $1,000 more. It was the end of my first year. I wrote and asked them to correct the amount, and they did not.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, sir. You said you were surprised when you got the notice?
I got a notice that said my current rent was $3,100.
So what were your thoughts when you saw the lease that had the total monthly rent as $3,274?
They told me, and I remember distinctly, that this was required by rent control.
So my point is you had some knowledge that
yes.
there may have been a different amount of...
Yes.
Okay.
And I knew that they did the same scheme in New York. And I told them, if you jack up my rent too much, I'll move. I mean, that is what I saw as my only remedy. But when I wrote and asked them to correct this, and then wrote again the next year and asked them to correct it, and they refused to do this, I filed a tenant petition. That's why I'm here. So the second big thing in this case is that the OAH determined that the term current rent did not mean the rent that is currently being charged, but it had a special meaning. That is, it was a term of art. Now, when there's a question of what a phrase in a statute means, an adjudicator is supposed to follow the rules of statutory construction. And I gave a 13-page analysis of the meaning of that term under the rules of statutory construction that was ignored by the housing provider and ignored by the OAH. Using statutory construction, it clearly showed the expected result, that the current rent was the actual rent and that the tenant paid, and not some maximum possible rent that was never charged and was never demanded and was never paid. Instead, the OAH, out of the blue, because this was never raised by the housing provider, decided that the phrase current rent was a term of art. A term of art is a specialized jargon with a special and unusual meaning that is evident only to the parties. So you have to look at who are the parties to this. There's the landlord and there's the tenant. They're the parties to the notice. So if this was indeed a term of art, right, it would have this specialized meaning both to the landlords and to the tenants. But tenants don't think in terms of the maximum rent. They don't think in terms of a rent that could be charged to any unit but never was charged.
I have a hard time reconciling that with the lease that says totally monthly rent, $3,274. And so getting back to the chairman's question around page 14 of your brief, you mentioned that tenants need to know what the rent's going to be to plan, right?
Yes.
So it should be in this notice.
Yes.
How do you reconcile that with the fact that it's arguably in the lease?
Well, how much their increase is going to be is never disclosed.
Well, not the increase, but the perception of what the current rent charge is. Like, I'm assuming that housing provider's contention is that
sure.
the rent's $3,274, and we're giving you this concession for now $45,
sure.
now $46.
Sure.
But the meeting of minds came together and said, here's the rent. The rent's here,
sure.
right?
And what the OAH said was that the housing provider can pick which definition it wants to use. Right? But that's not what the law says.
I guess my question is...
The law says...
My question is, did the lease arguably give you notice that the rent could be perceived to be $3,274?
No. It gave me the perception that the rent could go as high as that number. But they always provided a concession, and they assured me that there'd be a big concession the next year.
So you're saying that... Can you elaborate on what you mean by it can go as high as $3,274? Like, how would you
sure.
categorize...
This used to be called the ceiling rent, and the landlord now calls it the maximum legal rent, right? So it's the highest rent that they could possibly charge. And knowing what the highest rent they could possibly charge is very different. When I vacated my apartment, they advertised it for $1,100 less than the number given in my notice. They never intended to charge me that amount.
Let's back up a little. So when you signed the lease for 12
yes.
months, do you think the lease gave you notice that at the expiration of that term, if you wanted to renew, the rent could have been $3,274 plus whatever increase.
Well, they could try to get that, but that's nowhere near the market rent.
So
no one would rent that apartment for $3,200.
So again, I guess what I'm trying to see is I'm trying to see if this lease possibly gave you notice that, like you say, okay, you perceive this to be the ceiling of sorts, the maximum they can rent the place for.
Yes.
You signed the lease for 12 months.
Yes.
And you had this monthly reoccurring concession for that 12-month period.
Yes.
At the expiration, when it was time in 2015 to either move or sign another lease, were you aware that the possibility existed that your rent could have been, in the housing provider's eyes, $3,274 plus whatever the increase would have been?
Well,
you
have to divide this into two parts. Okay. Legally, yes, he could try to charge me $3,274 if he wanted to force me out. But as a practical matter, he's limited to $200 above the market rate. Because I don't want to move. I'd pay $200. In fact, I did pay $200.
But legally, you think, let's focus on part one, because I'm not interested that much in part two and the practicalities of it, of the market. But legally, do you think the housing provider would have had the option to say, hey, concession's over, here's your new rent amount, $3,274 plus whatever?
Well, yes, but that goes against the entire purpose of the notice. The purpose of the notice is to let me know what my new rent will be and whether I should move or not. Okay. I mean, essentially, you're telling every tenant you have to move.
So do you think it's really a situation that at the time that the form for which we're discussing was created, in view of the time and the effect of the act at the time that the form was created, that the current scheme of, as we described, a concession, just really wasn't envisioned? And so actually what the form is regulating is what the form has always and was intended to regulate, as you described, whatever at that time, maybe at one time, that was the actual amount, and has now become, by default, a ceiling maximum amount potential. And do you think it's really not so much that the form is wrong, but the form is just not actually reflective of the needs to regulate the rents being charged currently in the District of Columbia?
Well, my understanding is what happened is that when the ceiling rents were abolished 11 years ago, some landlords, like this one, raised their rent in their leases to the maximum rent that they could charge and then gave a discount. And this served two functions. The first is that they could had this unregulated discount that they could then shrink and raise the tenant's rent. And also, it had the ancillary benefit of computing the CPI plus 2 on the upper number rather than on the actual number. But I'm not going into any of that here. I mean, here I'm just talking about, was the notice adequate? Did it meet its purpose, or was it not really a notice?
Yes, but if the purpose of the notice was designed simply to provide information as to what this fictitious amount is, then it served its purpose. What it didn't do is serve notice onto this new less amount. It didn't serve that purpose.
Well, my understanding is that the previous notice contained both the ceiling rent and the actual rent. And you know, when the RAD issued this new form, landlords weren't charging different amounts. They were charging the actual rent. They didn't have these concession leases. And, in fact, a lot of apartments, like Quebec house down the street that is 900 units, but it's not owned by a REIT, it's owned by a family in Pennsylvania, is content with getting a decent return, which is what, 12% under the statute, and not trying to squeeze every last dollar so that its profits quarter by quarter are greater than they were a year ago.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
The Form 8...
It's going to be one more. Okay, yeah, Mike. Yeah.
The Form 8 references the rent charge as well as another term, the current allowable rent charge. How do you sort of define and distinguish those two?
I'm sorry. It has a line that says current rent charge. Your current rent charge is...
Okay, and right under there it says the basis of the adjustment in rent charges as follows. Check one. The first paragraph references rent charge and current allowable rent charge as well. Maybe you, I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Well,
part of the form,
but the thing that they checked was the CPI plus two.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Feynman, we asked a lot of questions, so you've got 5 minutes after Ms. Leege presents her case to rebut, and I'm certain that she's going to touch on things you're going to rebut. So, okay, Ms. Leege, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. As an initial matter, there were several things that were stated today that were not in the record below. Specifically, there were statements...
Could I ask you a favor? Could you speak a little louder?
Oh, I apologize. I'm losing my voice.
Okay.
I'll try. Please, if I keep speaking quietly, just remind me. In Mr. Feynman's argument... Is this helpful? Okay. In Mr. Feynman's argument, there was several times that there was argument presented of apparent facts that were not presented below, specifically of what the amount that was charged for the unit when he vacated and how much his unit was rented for, or the advertised rent when he first moved into the unit. Neither of those were at issue or presented as issues in the case below and therefore should not be considered by the commission. But getting to the point of this case, this is, although Mr. Feynman is deliberately, as he said, tried to file a petition that was not about concessions, this case is entirely about concessions. And that's because the lease that Mr. Feynman was under and the renewed lease that Mr. Feynman also entered into both had a concession. And as such, the commission has to consider those leases. The Court of Appeals in both HH Housing Corp. and in the Wilson case that was recently decided both found that the parties can negotiate can enter into such contractual adjustments into the lease. And as such, our position is that the concessions themselves are legal. Now, Mr. Feynman is arguing that the issue is solely as to notice. Well, the lease itself provided notice as to what his rent was. The rent in 2014 was $3,114 plus a parking fee, and then for a 12-month period, he was entitled to a concession. What Mr. Feynman...
Let me just ask you a question. What are the purpose of concession leases?
I think it depends on the landlord as to why they would have a concession. It depends on the tenant as to the purpose of a concession.
The judge below assumed that concession leases provided a benefit to a tenant insofar as there was a reduction from a certain rent that could have been charged to a lower amount, which would make the unit more affordable, and so you're getting the same unit at a reduced price as you would.
I think there's numerous reasons. I'll state several that I can think of off the top of my head. I think that's one of the reasons. Another is that if concessions were abolished, there's going to be times the housing providers just simply do not, if market rates are not such that it would be advantageous to rent a unit, such as I think if I'm recalling correctly, a lot of times around holidays, the rates for rental units are not as high as they are at different times of the year. A housing provider may choose to not rent a unit where they may, if they can enter into a concession lease, they can preserve that higher rent that they had already, or the higher amount. So that is a way that the housing provider can save that amount, but it also then benefits that tenant that needs to find an accommodation at a not an ideal time of the year. So it saves that tenant money where they may be otherwise pressed to find a housing accommodation.
Well, for how long can they save that? So, I mean, if the reality is that the market will simply not bear $3,100 ever, like how long is ever? And what would be the entitlement of the housing provider to like hold on to something that will just never, ever come to fruition when the actual market demand is simply $2,000?
Well, I think that would depend on the finances of the housing provider. Certain housing providers may be able to hold on to it for much longer than others, and I can't tell you for one housing provider how long that would be versus another, just because factually, one, it's not something that would be a business decision that it, certain ones could financially make that decision. But it's easier to see from a perspective of timing that certain units are better equipped to wait a few months, and there's just different times of the year that are just the different times of the year, different units because of the view of the units are often more advantageous to be rented. But
I have a question for you.
Of course.
On, I guess it's page 2 of the 2014 lease. It's provision 9. I could just, you don't have to find it.
Okay.
That's fine. The provisional lease concessions, it reads, if you receive the lease concession, you must fulfill all of your obligations under this lease for the entire lease term. So, for instance, I know one of the provisions in the lease talks about, let's see, criminal activity, a prohibition of criminal activity. I think it's Section 18. And one of the prohibitions basically says that you can't, you or a guest of yours cannot intimidate a neighbor, right? So let's assume Mr. Fineman has, I don't know, Becky Sue coming to visit him. And she gets into it with his neighbor and intimidates the neighbor. Is there any threat to his concession, since that's arguably a lease violation?
Well, I think that the only way that that's a threat to Mr. Fineman's concession is if the landlord-tenant court were to make a determination that it was, or there was an actual finding.
And so let's assume there is a finding that his friend, who just happened to come in town, intimidated the neighbor. I'm trying to understand what impact does that have on his concession based on this language in subsection 9. Or section 9, I'm sorry.
May I, first of all, actually have an opportunity to see this?
Yeah, it's on page 2 of the 2014 lease.
What paragraph?
9.
Paragraph 9?
It's titled okay. Lease Concessions. It's like the middle of the page. And it's page 2 of 5. I think there are two twos.
Well, if that were to be considered a valid reason, first of all, our position is that the sorry, my throat. May I clarify? So your question is that if the
it seems as if he could. His concession is at risk, basically reading this, if there any violation of this entire lease.
And that would imply, as I understand this particular provision, if there were to be a lease violation, but that lease violation would have to be found to actually be a violation.
And if there's, okay, so let's assume there's a violation, what happens to the concession?
Well, first of all, that would also presume that it would be found to be a lease violation, which would also presume that Mr. Feynman was evicted. I mean, that's because we would have to be found it by a landlord-tenant court, as I would understand that. I mean, I don't know how else we would find it would be actually found but by a landlord-tenant court through a 30-day notice.
So are you saying that eviction would be the result of a violation?
Well, your hypothetical was a...
You could pick any violation of the lease.
Let's go with non-payment of rent. Because that would also, or I mean, most violations are something that would require either a 30-day notice or a filing of a suit for non-payment of rent. And in those cases, you would have to have it found to be the actual lease violation by the landlord and tenant court. And in those cases, you're having to have the landlord and tenant court actually make those findings.
Okay.
And so I don't know what the logical conclusion is, but for the landlord and tenant court to make the final finding that there is an actual lease violation, and if it's anything but a monetary default, the actual finding is a judgment for possession for the landlord.
Okay, so if there's a... Okay.
And then the other thing I would call out to your attention is if paragraph 32 is if any provision of this lease is determined to be illegal, invalid, or unenforceable under present or future laws, it's considered severable. So our position is that Mr. Feynman did agree that if he violates any other term of this lease, that he would lose his concession, but... But the other portion is if for some reason a court of law were to find that, or if the landlord-tenant court were to find that he was not to lose his concession as a result, that particular provision would say that that does not make the rest of his lease severable from, okay. Or that severable.
Is the amount that the housing provider puts on file as part of the registration, is that presumably for Mr. Feynman's unit, the rent, the maximum amount of rent that could be charged. What is the your understanding? And there is a in filing that document, there's an affirmation at the bottom, so that it's a sworn statement. So that's what the rent is. And the presumption, I guess, is that it's a legal amount. That is, that it is an amount that, for a rent-controlled unit, that has been complied with all of the regulations under the Rental Housing Act. What difficulty would it be to put in? My colleague pointed out in number 9, paragraph 9, it says, any concession designated on the term sheet as a one-time or upfront concession must be applied first toward your rent during the first month of the initial term and the consecutive months thereafter until the balance of the concession credit reaches zero. So I guess your argument would be that the concession amount is a fixed amount that serves as a credit against the maximum amount. It really isn't a lease amount. It incorporates, the concession becomes a credit. So you don't get a concession lease. You get a maximum lease with a concession credit. And that's how this reads like that. And as such, the maximum lease would then be on file with no acknowledgement that there's a credit that can reach zero, by the way, if it's paid in full, that would in fact reduce that maximum amount as a credit would. There's no reporting requirement And I'm just asking here, why isn't the concession amount, if a law were to say you have to put the concession amount in as the registered rent charged, it would seem to me that would be more accurate than putting in a maximum amount in which this concession credit is an unknown credit. So you don't quite know, you're not identifying what the nature of the credit is. And so the reporting is that it's a maximum amount, but it doesn't may have any relationship to what is actually being charged. And I'm just puzzled by why a housing provider wouldn't put in the concession amount as being the amount that's actually charged when in fact it is.
May I ask for clarification? Which form are you talking about for notification? Are you talking about on form 8 and 9?
No, I'm just talking about on page 2 of the lease. The lease concessions paragraph that my colleague just talked about, it says lease concessions, which is really to me, you know, you said this is a concessions case. Mr. Feynman says it's a notice case. I'm going with you at this point, since you called it a concession case, and I'm saying it seems that a concession is deemed at least by housing providers in this lease as a credit. So it's a separate entity, and in my view, so there's no such thing as a concession lease. It's a maximum lease with a concession credit, and I'm just wondering what if you're going to do that, then isn't the correct reporting maximum lease, maximum amount, concession credit? What that would then give a much more accurate statement of what is actually being paid. No? Am I not seeing something here or not?
There has been legislation proposed by the City Council to require that, but the other portion of that is the problem that there would also need to be notice requirements included in such, or if that were to be adopted by the City Council. To clarify that, it's only for a certain period of time, because what I also addressed in our brief is what Mr. Feynman did not discuss is what would have happened if the landlord, after a 12-month period, had not wished to enter into another year lease, had not offered to enter into a concession. Mr. Feynman says that he would have moved. Well, that may have been what had happened, but there would not have been a filing requirement, because there would not, under the terms of the lease, the rent for the unit was $3,114, if I recall correctly. The terms of the lease said that the $945 concession had expired. So after 12 months, that concession was gone. And there was an obligation at that point in time to pay $3,114 rather than that lower amount. And there were options that at that moment in time for the parties to do numerous things. A tenant can move, the parties can attempt to negotiate a new lease. There were a multitude of options that could happen.
But you got to understand.
But the landlord did not have to, or the obligation, although the facts in this case were that there was another notice of rent increase that was done and there was another lease that was entered into, that particular filing requirement was
would
never
there have been anything under the law that would have prevented Mr. Feynman from signing a lease where the maximum rent is $10,000 and the lease concession is $7,000, and so you or $8,000 to bring you back down? What is the check on this maximum amount as being an amount that is reasonable to calculate rent increases from, rather than the amount that's actually being paid? Because it appears to me that amount could be anything as long as it's sworn to be an amount that complies with the law. Maybe $10,000 complies with, largely speaking, the law. I mean,
I'm just wondering, that's the issue here is when you increase a rent that's been, quote, a concession amount by an amount that is calculated on a maximum amount that happens to be on file with the District of Columbia without any acknowledgement of any concession in that amount or a credit, then that amount could almost be anything. And you could then set increases based on any maximum amount that's filed with RAD. I think that's what the issue is here, Ms. Leagy. I don't think it's... While I understand Mr. Feinman's argument on notice, I think the notice goes to what are you providing notice of and how accurate is that as an amount that could reasonably be charged for rent for a unit, because there's no upper boundary for that amount, as I see it. Help me here, because you represent the industry here, so why not put in $10,000 and give them a concession of $7,000? I mean, I'm having trouble kind of figuring out where this. What's the limit on setting this amount that we're using to base rent concessions on?
Well, my client could not put $10,000 in this case because the maximum legal rent for the unit was not $10,000.
Okay.
They could put in $3,114.
Was there still room to go higher?
I do not know for certain because I had not specifically examined that issue since that was not challenge of Mr. Feinman's. I did make sure that I examined the amount that Mr. Feinman challenged, but I did not examine any further than what Mr. Feinman had challenged.
Okay.
What's the practice here?
But may I finish answering the commissioner's argument? But as to the second portion of your argument, as to the differential, that was addressed in the HH housing case about the differential and of basically the equitable nature of that. And that's not something that Mr. Feinman has raised himself as to the equitable nature of the concession itself. And so as he has not argued that on appeal, I do not believe that should be considered anything further.
Okay. What's the practice as far as the notice to tenants? Is the practice that you use this higher amount when you report what the current rent charge is, or do you actually use the amount that's lower that they're actually paying? What's the practice among your clients that you've noticed?
Well, I think that the only answer can be as to the housing provider in this particular case, since I only represent in this particular are the landlord in this particular case. But in Mr. Feinman's case, what happened was the notice that he received, the Form 8, was based on the higher rent, the non-concession rent. So the increase was based on the $3,114 rather than the lower amount.
So I guess as we're interested in at least exploring whether there's consistency as far as the number that's being reported to the government by housing providers, so do you believe that what your client is doing is the best practice?
I would say that is something that is under has been under consideration by the city council, but I am only here to represent the landlord in this particular case, and I would say that our position is certainly permitted under the statute as currently interpreted by the commission and the DC Court of Appeals.
Okay.
How onerous would it have been in this particular case if your client was required to file the form as it exists, but then file a separate form documenting and placing the current tenant on notice of, oh, by the way, this is your concession amount, reminder, star, that's it. So they file a form, and so it would be like a Form 10, which essentially the only purpose of Form 10 would be for the housing provider to place the current tenant on notice that there either is a concession or there is not a concession and the amount of the concession.
But why is the tenant, why is the landlord required to do that? Because
But it's onerous.
It's onerous because what that is requiring is after each and every hour that is only done if the landlord enters into a concession with the tenant, and now after each and every one of those, you have these I think Mr. Feynman's building's over 700 units. And now for every single time you do that, you have to do this, and as opposed to the Form 9s, which you can do on a monthly basis, you're now having to do this on an ad hoc basis when the tenant has now received notice because they just signed a new lease. They have the notice.
How do you file the Form 9s and Form 8 simultaneously?
You do not file the Form 8.
You send
a Form 8 to the tenant, and you file the Form 9.
Correct.
So the tenant already has a copy of the Form 8. The city has a copy of the Form 9. Mm-hmm. But the tenant will also have a copy of their lease, which has their amount that they have to pay.
Yes, but in this instance, how onerous would it be for you to have to keep up with that? You obviously have the mechanisms to do that through your accounting scheme as an ongoing monthly percentage discount credit. So why would it be that onerous to create an additional filing and notice responsibility?
It's very onerous for this particular client because, first of all, these are not done by my client. These are done by a third-party vendor. They are done in Mr. Feynman's building's case, before the lease would have been entered into, as he's already explained. And now you're after the fact, after he enters into this lease, doing this. And it's also not required right now because the Form 9 would require, or this Form 10 as you propose, would be saying let's say it's a concession for a one-year time, saying that we're for a one-year time doing this for Mr. Feynman. And we have to we would have to send to the third-party vendor that information. And then we have to send that to the third-party vendor for every single individual in Mr. Feynman's building. And so it's an extra layer of accounting. It's an extra layer of expenses to...
And again, the notice only actually says, and I believe this case, it was $946 concession. It's like a numerical amount. Oh, by the way, placing you on notice, reminding you that your amount of concession is $946. And if there was a notice requirement, a separate piece of paper, that would be very onerous.
Yes.
All right.
Because Mr. Feynman has already agreed to it by the terms of his lease that he just signed.
So what if, instead, the current form that you're already making use of, the Form 8 and Form 9, there just actually was another piece of paper. It actually was like an extra box. Oh, by the way, your concession is $946. So it's your same form. You're actually only plugging in three extra numbers at the bottom.
We can't do it that way because that would imply that you already had entered into another lease with the tenant. And these Form 8 has to be sent more than 30 days before the increase is implemented. And sometimes these new leases are not executed with a tenant until around the time that the lease is expired. Either right at the time it's expiring or afterwards. So to do it with the Form 8, adding lines, it just couldn't work because timing-wise it would not work.
And nor with Form 9.
So, and on Form 8 and Form 9, both of them are, you would then be telling us that they were not timely. And so we would have new tenant petitions for that reason. So it would create another level of issue.
Very good. Thank you.
Can you sum up, please? Because I'm sorry,
I've already answered done all my arguments.
Okay.
So.
All right. This is my last question for you. Is thinking about this $3,100, that's the maximum rent you can charge, Mr. Feynman. How do you distinguish that rent charge from the over and ceiling?
They are still... The difference is that unlike back in the day, sorry, I'm now sounding like I'm 80 years old, I apologize. my client cannot all of a sudden tell Mr. Feinman that I am going to increase his rent next year by $500, and he is bound by it, but for he already knew that. Mr. Feinman knew that because he entered into a lease. And if Mr. Feinman chooses, or he has the same options he did when he originally entered into the lease. My client has a preserved amount. They have a rent, in this instance, of $3,114 that they could charge Mr. Feinman. Now, Mr. Feinman might look at my client and say, I'm not going to pay that. I'm going to find a better landlord to, or a better place to live that charges me $1,000. But the difference is that my client always had the right to charge that. It's just...
Okay. You know, let me just ask you about Double H real quick. It says Double H, which is relied on below. Double H is outside rent control. That's what Double H is about. It's saying a lease is a lease and a contract's a contract and a condition. Because the housing provider can condition a discount from an otherwise applicable rent increase on a month-to-month tenant's agreement to enter into a new lease. There's no question. I think that the issue is what value is Double H if it's outside the rent control context that does not define terms such as rent, rent charged. So what value to, I mean, I think what we have here is we have a hybrid situation that is part contract, part regulatory, and what you're arguing is Double H and progeny, which is contract, lease as contract, you sign it, and the remedies are clear from the lease, and that's what controls. Lease ultimately controls. And what Mr. Feinman is saying is, well, you know what, this is a hybrid type of situation, because this isn't a traditional contract lease as in Double H. This is a lease that is clearly under the laws of the District of Columbia's Rental Housing Act, and as a result, terms change as the legislation dictates, not as the parties dictate. And I'm just wondering what value is Double H if we're arguing superior court contract issue versus compliance with the Rental Housing Act and the terms of the Rental Housing Act and the definitions of the Rental Housing Act with respect to rent.
Well, first of all, I would also say that the Commission would also have to consider the Wilson case that was recently decided.
Which one?
The Wilson versus Rental Housing Commission case, that although the, which in part, it more discussed retaliation, but in that case there was the discussion of the flex leases, and the Court of Appeals had argued that, or the Court of Appeals had decided that the flex leases that the Commission had to consider were permitted, and the, frankly, the Commission's decisions below were far more valuable than on that issue than the Court of Appeals decision. But frankly, the Double H housing decision really is useful on the fact that the Commission has to still consider the fact that that there was a lease at issue in this case, that there was, and that we have to consider the fact that there was a for lack of a better saying, wrinkle to the terminology of rent in this case, and how that just a little bit changes the dynamic of this particular case as opposed to a case that was just a normal month-to-month tenancy, as you often have before the Commission. And so I think I forgot part of your question. I apologize.
No, you got there. Again, you know, you're. Sometimes it sounds to me up here occasionally, like apples and oranges, you know, we're arguing contract lease on the one hand, and on the other hand, we're talking about a regulatory scheme that regulates that lease. And certainly, the venue for suing on the lease, on the contract, outside of the Rental Housing Act, is Superior Court, and you sue on contract, and you sue for breach of the terms of that contract. The refusal to pay the concession amount, for example, that would seem to me to be, it would sound in two places. One, you could sue in Superior Court for failure to pay the concession amount is the lease amount. In OAH, that would be an issue that would go to, wait a second, what is the rent being actually charged here? And we can only determine the accurate amount over there by understanding what the actual rent charged is under the law. And that could change the result over there because they're looking at it as a contract issue under the lease, and we're looking at it as defined terms under the law. And that's where the analysis below becomes a little murky, because it tries to use contract principles as well as principles under the statute, and it can get murky. Let me just put it that way. And that's the reason for these questions. Thank you. Mr. Feinman, you got 5 minutes.
Okay, I'd like to talk about some of the issues, questions you just raised, in reverse order, because that's how my mind works. So first you talked about how onerous multiple forms would be to show the existing concession. And the answer is not really, because they could all go on the notice form 8. The law simply says here are minimum information that has to be in your notice. So there's nothing to prevent additional information from being in that notice. And it's all generated by computers, by rental housing consultants anyway. The real problem is it still wouldn't be meaningful to the tenant, because the tenant needs to know not what his existing concession is, but what his new concession will be. That is, will they shrink the concession by $10 a month, which is trivial, or will they shrink it, as they typically do, by $200 a month, which is substantial? All right, so I don't see that as actually being a solution to the problem that is raised by this. The second thing is you talked about the consistency of reporting rent to the RAD. And if you look at my reply brief to the to their motion to set aside the summary judgment, there's evidence there in the form of a affidavit from Harry Gorell, who was the president of the Tenant Association at 3003, and that includes an email from the rent administrator saying that their policy is to never look at or examine these Form 9s that are filed with them. They don't look at them for reasonableness. They don't look at the numbers on them. They don't look at them, essentially. They just take them and file them in a box, right? So you are asking, really, what's to keep them from putting $10,000? And the answer is, maybe if someone goes in and files a tenant petition, they will be forced to put down the real number and maybe find $5,000. But it's for a 600 unit building, this really is not important. So in practical matters, there is nothing that keeps them from putting $10,000 down. You asked a question about violations of the lease and how that would affect the concessions. And she said that they'd have to, that would have to be adjudicated by a court or by the OAH. But if you look at Section 19 of the lease, at the end of it, it says, we reserve the right to be the sole judge of acceptable conduct and to determine the appropriate action necessary to deal with unacceptable conduct, including but not limited to taking actions to terminate the lease and to pursue eviction remedies. So the answer really is it doesn't have to be adjudicated, that they unilaterally make that decision and can unilaterally then, under the concession clause, terminate your concession. And she also objected to the talking about my rent when I left. That was also in an affidavit attached to the reply brief below. Now we get to the real heart of this, the double H question. And that's really, does the lease override the Rental Housing Act? Can a landlord put things in the lease that rewrite the definitions in the Rental Housing Act and supersede the Rental Housing Act? And of course the answer is no, that the Rental Housing Act supersedes anything in a lease. So when the Rental Housing Act says this is the definition of rent, then it doesn't matter what's in the lease. In fact, all these leases are kind of different. So the 3003 lease defines rent to include what they call additional rent. So it's things like late fees. It's things like if you lost your key and you have to get a replacement key. You know, they do that so that they can evict you if you don't pay those amounts instead of having you go to small claims court. But they do have different definitions of rent in different leases throughout D.C. Some use their form. Some use the National Apartment Association form. Others may use yet other forms. You can't allow, under a regulatory scheme, the landlord to define basic terms like rent. You have to have one definition, which is provided in the statute. So it's just beyond me to see how the lower court, the OAH, could have said that rent doesn't really mean rent. It means what the landlord chooses it to mean. That's really all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Finan.
I'm sorry.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. You you know, you both of you have provided a lot of food for thought. We ask questions because these are very important issues, and we don't legislate here, so we can't, you know, this is ultimately, this may be resolved by the City Council. And they're the correct place for it to be resolved. What we have to do is we have to look at the current act and say, okay, how does what's going on out here comply with the terms of the current act? It's not a question of contract, per se. It's a question of how does the contract comply? We can't be driven by pure contractual axioms because they don't apply in this case. On the other hand, there is a freedom to contract, and so it does. It, you know, there's this area of tension between the law and contract, and that's what we have to try to resolve here. That's what, to me, the concessions question raises squarely. So, but I thank you, Mr. Finan, for your presentation. Thank you, Ms. Leagy, for yours. It's now 12:10. And we are adjourned.